Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg, and this is Side Note,
a podcast where every episode we chat about life and what's stumping us right now.
And then we research and splice in all the science and mind-blowing shiznit throughout so you are entertained while simultaneously learning. Today we are talking about therapy. To start, I'm going to talk about how I had a panic attack seeing my therapist in public. Then we're going to take you on a historical journey into the past horrors of psychiatry and end with a debate about whether or not we feel therapy is actually effective. Today's Side Notes will be presented by myself, Greg, and our producer, Rachel.
Hey guys, let's get it started.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good, how are you? I'm a little hungover because we had a YouTube event last night.
Oh, I'm not, because I wasn't really drinking, because I was like, you know, trying to take it easy, trying to take care of my mental health. Hello, that's Segway.
Yeah, that's true. Today we are talking about therapy, something that we both partake in. And
I mean, you more so than me. Yes. Like, you kind of got me on the train. Why did you start doing therapy in the first place?
Honestly, the thing about why I actually started, I'm not so clear about it. It was definitely like work, like our relationship, working together. It was something that I remember a time I feeling really sad. It was when I remember thinking about death. Once and being like, really, just like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, kind of. Like, when I die, I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to be okay
like,
with.
What age was this at?
This was only like, this was what, 3.5 years ago? And I remember also thinking it's like a money thing. I remember thinking, like, because we've like made a bunch of money, someone like suggested therapy, and it was like, okay, feeling I could afford it, honestly. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it was like, okay, this is now an option now, like $100 an hour. That's a lot of money. And so that's one of the reasons I went. But I remember, I had a weird experience about my first time that I went and did therapy, and it was because it's scary. Like, you've done it your first time. Like, walking.
Yeah, it's so awkward.
It's so, like, sitting in the waiting room, you're like, oh my God, and there's just, like, psychology today.
Who's this person
gonna be? Who's it gonna be? We're just gonna talk about me? Like, I don't know. It's so weird, I remember the stigma hit me. I'm like, I am here because I'm sick, and I need help.
Really? Did you actually think
when I was in the waiting room? I did. Like, when I was in the waiting room, I was across from someone. I'm like, okay, you're probably having a big issue too. I don't know. It just made me feel like, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess I had a bit of apprehension about whether or not I needed to be there. Anyways, it's scary for anyone who is doing that. The first time you're in the waiting room, the first time you go is really scary. And I remember, like, I chose a girl. I remember thinking I need looking research. I'm like, I want it to
be a
woman.
I don't think I would ever, even a gay man, I don't know that I feel comfortable with. I feel like, I mean, if it was a man, I think it had to be a gay man.
I don't know. For me, it's like not even a man. I think
it's just a woman.
In my life, people I've been able to be like vulnerable and open and who I've really taken advice from are women.
Yeah, same.
Mitch and I are not alone in seeking out a female therapist. Studies have found that women overwhelmingly seek out female therapists, whereas on average, men express no preference. But those men who did have a preference, it was for a female therapist. A Finnish study of substance abuse clients found that clients preferred female therapists because they had a more positive attitude towards them. Another study that examined therapist gender, and client sexual orientation found female psychologists held more positive attitudes and treatment expectations for queer clients than male psychologists. This is interesting, as Mitch and I are both queer and adamantly have leaned towards female therapists. The preference for women may also be related to availability. Psychotherapy was once a profession dominated by men, and now the opposite is true. Today, men earn only 1 in 5 of all master degrees in psychology and make up less than 10% of social workers. This does not mean that a male therapist might not be right for you. Finding the right therapist can come down to a lot of different factors, including type of therapy they provide, and if their personality works well with your own. But it is interesting to note that this is a field of research, study, and practice that is becoming more female. Your woman, the second I saw her, I was like, this is gonna be good. Like, she just looked like, she looked like my older sister. I mean, she was young. She was like,
oh, she's that young?
She was like, I was probably 27. No, I have a different therapist now. I was probably 26, 27, and she was probably 30, 31. Oh. And that's why also she was inexpensive. She was, I think, $80 an hour because she was new.
Okay.
And she was just like, the second I saw her, I was like, if you were my barista, I'd be like, how's your day? Like, I just like love her. Just such good vibes.
Okay, that's
and whatever.
Cool.
And so it was so scary. Like, you know, she talks about you. Immediately she got to like something I'd never thought about myself. I thought it was like really interesting, but left kind of scared. And she just was etched in my memory as someone who I'm like, oh my God, like I made eye contact with her for 30 seconds. Like, it was just like such an intimate experience.
Yeah, because also for you, eye contact has always been, or like that.
She knew that in 2 seconds. Right? I like sat down like in silence, like panicking, like so red. And like, she was looking at me with her eyes and she wasn't saying anything. And I was like, oh, you can't hold eye contact. And I was just like, what? And immediately was like, what? And she knew a lot within seconds, like
could,
she was
like,
good.
Understand
bits
of me,
right? I don't know. Like, yeah, she got to me very quickly. Leave like biking home, like I'm not listening to headphones, but I can like hear music. I'm like, that was the most like emotional deep thing
ever. You mean you could hear music?
I don't know. I just felt like so like it freaked me out. Like I felt good, but also so scared. Like this woman has all of a sudden become the, like one person in my life who like knows stuff about me. Then I go to like a soccer practice, which is
what?
Also so random.
What
I know.
Soccer practice? You're making this
no,
story up.
No, my friend Marley, who's like a jock, she was like, we're going to go to the park and like play soccer practice. And I was like, okay, because they were on a team. I'm like, yeah, I'll do that.
Wait,
to see
okay,
you.
But if you're just like playing casually one time with someone, that's not soccer practice.
No, they're a team. Listen, what? Why are you? Oh my God, you're so.
Because you're just like, you're like on the podcast, like I went to my soccer practice. Like you've never said those words to me ever in your life.
Okay, that's part of the story because it was okay, weird. Okay, so they're a soccer team, and the way I got to hang out with Marley because she is a jock and also like crazy was like, okay, I'll come to your soccer practice. So I go to this soccer practice with these people I don't really know that well. We kick the, okay, you're right. I literally did this once. We kick the ball around, whatever. And they're like, okay, great practice. Like nice striking and kicking and stomping. Let's go get beers. I'm like, okay, I guess that's what they do. So we all go get beer. It's me and Marley and a bunch of people I don't know. We sit down at this bar. And then all of a sudden, the waitress comes up and she's like, may I take your orders? And it's my therapist who I've met once.
No.
Who's like, and she looks at me in the eyes and I look at her in the eyes and I'm like,
you only knew her one time.
After one session, also one meaningful session that like, exactly. So I'm like, I'm immediately turning purple. Marley looks at me and she's like, okay, it's so weird because like you're having like a panic attack and you're already turning red and you haven't even drank anything. I'm like fumbling over my words. She just like smiles, takes everyone's order, gives me this kind of look, or I don't even know. I think it might have been in my head.
Right.
Walks away. And also, there's all these people I don't know. And I panic because I'm just like, guys,
yeah,
that was my therapist.
Oh, you told them.
Yeah, I just was like, I went to therapist once. And they were all just like, oh, okay, Greg, like, cool. And then she'd like every time she'd bring the drinks, like, everyone would stop talking. And I'd be like,
oh my God, that probably made it so much worse that you even told them.
I know,
them.
But that's like me in a nutshell. I'm like, okay, I can't. I'm having such
can't
a
just,
panic
like, sit
attack.
There in your own.
Yeah, like some people might have been able to be like play it cool, but like I was like, they're gonna be like, why is this guy sweating? He was
right.
So chill and like normal like 10 seconds ago. Now he like can't speak. I hate that I blush. It has been a hindrance my whole entire life. I cannot get away with lying. I get embarrassed so easily, and then like bam, my face turns red instantly. But why? Blushing is an uncontrollable reflex caused by the sympathetic nervous system, the part of your nervous system which activates your fight or flight response. This causes a release of adrenaline, which dilates your blood vessels to improve blood flow and oxygen delivery throughout your body. Interestingly, veins generally don't respond to adrenaline, but the ones in your face do. Also, blushing is entirely exclusive to humans. No other animals blush. Scientists are still unsure why. Even Charles Darwin himself commented that blushing is the most peculiar and most human of all expressions. But there are some scientific theories into why we blush. The main theory suggests that blushing evolved as a means to show regret or remorse within the social codes of human society. By blushing, we're showing others we recognize that we misstep socially, and in many ways, it acts as a nonverbal physical apology for our mistake we just made. Several studies have found that people who blush after a social mishap are more favorable to onlookers. Maybe that is the case from a scientific perspective, but it's nice to know that it comes off as endearing because it feels more like my face is on fire, and a lot of the time it causes people to go, "Well, why is your face so red?" And that doesn't feel that human, Mr. Darwin. So what are your stories, like, because you don't tell me much about therapy. Like, what stories do you have?
I don't know if that's true. I feel like I tell you more than you tell me.
Okay,
but to clarify things for people listening, like, I didn't, like, you went to therapy before I did.
And for, like, two and a half years before.
You know,
yeah.
You've always told me you should go, because we have, like, a pretty high-stress job. We work together. We're in a relationship
together. And I've seen the benefits. Like, I've changed so much in my
life. Yeah, and I think even though my sister is a psychotherapist and has a therapy practice, I still had, maybe it was that stigma, or maybe I just didn't feel like I needed it, even... I had to change my perspective to be like, you know what, you don't, it's kind of like working out. It's like, you can go somewhere and practice and make your brain and mentality stronger. It doesn't just have to be because you feel broken to go to a therapist. Even if I was broken, it was just like the mentality I had to have.
But like,
to
what
get
would you
there.
Say when you got there? Like, how'd you explain it to them?
Why I was there.
Yeah, like if you were kind of
well,
like,
well, I don't
sure.
know. See, now, this always happens to me, okay? Like, I went, the first therapist I went to on my own, like, I tried to do so much research. Like, I looked them up online.
Yeah.
This is classic me. Like, even when I'm buying a product,
like, Mitch will do
I'm going to
so
research
much,
it for, like, a month.
Mitch did so much research. Okay, on his new computer. We need to get new computers for work. I get one from Staples. the staple computer. Kind of cheap. whatever. It's doing great. Love it. Mitch builds his own. Does so much research. Blah, blah, blah. Gets this computer. And it's, like, not functioning right now. It's,
no,
like, breaking.
It is now. There's been
but
some
just,
glitches. Okay.
It's you and it, like, you looked for therapists for days.
Her forever, like I do with other things. And then when I got there, I don't know how this didn't come across, but then I started realizing, like, I'm pretty sure she's a therapist for, like, teens. And like, and I feel like she's slowly kind of, like, let me know that she mostly works with, like, young
people. You didn't
people.
You did so much research, ended up
I
going to a ch- like a child.
Because there's not, like, a proper database to, like, really know about a therapist. And so I was just, like, thought I was doing research, but when I got there, then yeah, I just felt
when
like,
you showed up, was she like, "So, how is grade 9?
I know. And I was like, I'm like, that's a long time ago. Are we just, like, going into my past? So yeah, I found that sort of uncomfortable and awkward. And then I had
did
this,
she say, like, "I'm for teens, and well, you should know that because you're 20.
No, like, she was definitely like, "I can definitely work." It was in our first session that she said, "You know, a lot of times I work with, like, teens that are having, like, struggling through those kinds of problems." But I mean, she was kind of probably my age, if not a little bit older as well, which I liked though. I think I chose her because she was young. Like, when I came across a lot of other therapists.
How young? Was she a teenager?
No, she was 19. No, she was probably early 30s, but it just made me feel better to have someone who probably could relate to my problems.
Imagine you were so bad. Like, you did so much research. You go and you, like, pour your soul out. They're like, "Sorry, I'm a lawyer. I don't know. You're in the wrong office."
Oh my God.
Something like that.
That would happen to me too.
Like, yeah, you'd be like,
wait, what? And they're like, "That was $500 an hour." A little more expensive. Yeah. It took me a while to sort of realize that just because someone's your age, it doesn't mean they're the best person to help you figure out stuff. I think in my mind, I thought,
she's young. She's not an
have,
older
like,
person or a
6-year-old therapist. Yeah. Not to be ageist, but I was just like, they might not understand.
They're probably wise. Yeah.
They might not understand that, like, I do YouTube and what is that? Whereas someone my age might. But I think from there, I decided to try somebody else. And I liked her a lot. That was my hardest thing. I was just like, I like her. I get along with her, but maybe I'm slowly realizing it's
not
working.
Well, people say that you really should shop around therapists and be okay with that. And therapists aren't, like, that's what I mean. That's probably something you need to work on, therapy. Maybe you were trying too hard to accommodate her. But it's like, actually, all therapists know the right thing to do is shop around. Her only advice would be, if you're feeling that way, please find someone else, because that is actually how therapists know. They can only work with clients who work for them. And it's up to the client to make that decision. From what I understand.
It's just hard though, because you think that they would have it's hard as the client to know what decision is right for you.
Because even my therapist, like, when things have been going okay, it is interesting because I think that she's really good, because she'll say to me, she'll be like, "Greg, I mean, things are good. Like, we're not doing as much work in these sessions. You should maybe stop for, like, 3 months." That's like, she loses her money, but that makes me respect.
That's the best sign, though. Yeah. If someone says that, like, obviously that's a good sign for you, but then you're also like, I have a good trust with you, because now I feel like you're not just exploiting me to make money.
And it's funny, she's like, three months later, I'm like, "Oh my God." Like, she's like, "You'll be back." Like, because that's
life. Yeah, you want to continually improve. But you're right. Sometimes if you're in a good place, it's hard to go in and just be like,
it's awkward. You go in, you're like, "Oh my God,
I had a really cute week. Like, I guess we could bring up my parents again, but, like, I'm feeling like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you don't get as much out of it. They know, too. It's, like, awkward probably for them. They're like, that was a lot of money.
So up next, I'm going to take you on a deep dive into the dark history of the dangerous, horrifying practices around psychiatry. It is so whack what we used to do. Side Note is a newer podcast, so what we would ask you to do right now for us is to tell your friends about it. Tell your parents about it. Tell your enemies about it. Your frenemies. Strangers on the street. Just Side Note Podcast. It's a really good one. You should subscribe. Just, you know, that would be very helpful for us. Something you could do directly is to rate it on Apple iTunes. It's really important to leave a review. That also helps with their algorithm, apparently. As YouTubers and podcasters, it's weird how much of our livelihood relies on algorithms and AI, but I mean, I think that's another episode in the making. Thank you so much, and we'll go back to the show. Today, most mental illness is treated with a combination of psychiatric medication and talk therapy. But it wasn't always this way. And psychiatry's dark history may be why some find therapy to be weird, scary, or not even worth their time. Here is a timeline of the horrors of human psychiatry. In the 9th century, the Middle East is likely where psychotherapy was first developed, because in the West at the time, serious mental disorders were generally treated as demonic or medical conditions requiring punishment and confinement. Let's start with our good friend Freud. In 1884, Freud published a paper that year called Uber Coca, where he describes the most gorgeous excitement and exhilaration and lasting euphoria when he ingested cocaine. And he described his ability to fight depression and indigestion problems. I'm the Freud, and I say nose candy for all. Oh my gosh, that went straight to British. Oh God. Fast forward to 1907, when psychiatrist Henry Andrews Cotton had the strong belief that all mental illness was the result of untreated infections. He practiced what he referred to as surgical bacteriology, which included the removal of some or all of a patient's teeth, tonsils, spleen, colon, ovaries, or other organs. As one could expect, mortality rates from these practices were high and cure rates were low. Next up, we've got the lobotomy in the 1930s. A lobotomy is when you drilled a hole in the skull of someone and then used a sharp instrument with a wire loop at the end to cut parts of the brain apart. The first human lobotomy was done in 1935 by Ygas Moniz, Portuguese. I don't know if that was the right pronunciation, but we'll move on. And he won a Nobel Prize for this work. At the time, they thought people with schizophrenia, depression, and compulsive disorders had fixed circuits in the brain that were wired wrong and overly connected. Therefore, they needed to be physically cut apart. Tens of thousands of lobotomies were done as the procedure was popular, mostly because at the time it felt like there weren't really any other options. The research, again, didn't exist to show its efficacy, and then the rise of psychiatric drugs in the 1950s made lobotomies disappear from popularity.
On October 29th, 1929, reality finally caught up with the stock market. And what went up came crashing back down.
It's now 1938 and people are super depressed, and little do they even know, World War II is about to start. And guess what? We get shock treatment, now referred to as electroconvulsion therapy.
Now just bite down on it. That's right. Just bite down. Now bite down on it.
It involves attaching electrodes to the skull to send an electrical current through the brain, using electricity to induce seizures. This is certainly a counterintuitive way of treating illness and would sometimes lead to broken bones, temporary memory loss, and cases of death. But the shocking thing is, ECT did work to a degree and relieve symptoms in patients. Reasons why this might be effective is because depression may stem from the brain's regular electrical signals misfiring. So sending a jolt of electricity through the brain to induce seizure might act as a restart. But whether it's effective or not, it has a dark history where in mental hospitals, it was used to control difficult patients and maintain order in the ward. Hello, one flew over the cuckoo's nest. Next up, we have deep sleep Therapy. It sounds nice, but it is not. It was designed to treat schizophrenia, depression, obesity, and addiction by administering a mixture of barbiturates, which are central nervous system depressants that would put you into a prolonged sleep. The thought was that the sleep would help you unlearn habits, and they would give you electric shock therapy while you were in this chemically induced sleep so you wouldn't feel it. And hopefully when you woke up weeks later, your habits would be curbed. Famously, in Australia, when this procedure was done between the 1960s and 70s, 26 people actually died. Harry Bailey was the man largely responsible for these procedures, and he killed himself while under investigation. Interestingly, the Church of Scientology was a big advocate for these patients, and in his suicide note he wrote, "Let it be known that the Scientologists and the forces of madness have won." What the F? But also, like, go Tom Cruise and your Scientologists on this one, but let's not get into that. We should do an episode about Scientology. Writing it down right now. Words from a book showed me the way. We're at the height of the Cold War.
First, you duck, and then you cover.
And America was becoming increasingly worried about the potential of mind control as a way to weaken an individual and cause them to force confessions. The CIA rolled out Project MKUltra, which was a secret program to test on human subjects how they could control people's minds, often without consent from the patient. Many of these tests were run in Montreal, Canada, D.F., Canada, by Dr. Ewan Cameron. He used LSD and various paralytic drugs and shock therapy at 30 to 40 times its normal power to experiment on people. These experiments were typically carried out on patients who had entered the Institute for minor problems such as anxiety disorders or postpartum depression and used them as subjects for his secret project. Many suffered permanent debilitation after what was essentially torture. Okay, whoa, so that was a lot.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
We said there is a very dark history to psychiatry, and Mitch and I right now are going to get into a debate about talk therapy, which is still controversial, but obviously doesn't seem nearly as physically grotesque as what we just spoke about. Is it effective? Can it change who you are? And is it even a good thing? We disagree, so we'll get into that now. So, Mitch, what are your actual thoughts on therapy? Because I confidently, after going, I'm very much like, everyone, if you can afford it, if you can get through York, you need to go. Whereas you come, you're more
yeah,
skeptical.
Yeah, I think I don't know. Definitely there's been times that I've gone and I've come out with really powerful tools that, I know that sounds weird, but like they've given me something concrete, like go work on this, think about this when you're in moments of high stress or when you're in moments where you're feeling down or whatever. And I think that's maybe more of what I need. But sometimes I leave and, because a therapist isn't necessarily there to give you advice, right? Like, they
you always say that your therapist just asks you questions and never tells you anything. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what I've kind of felt. Both the ones that I went to, like, it was mostly them being like a person to listen, and I'm like, that's not actually really what I want or need. I actually want someone to like actively participate with me in working through my problems.
But you've also said to me that sometimes you go in and you're like, I just talk and talk and talk. I'm like, are you not asking them questions? Are you ever like, what do I do?
I don't think any therapist really will say like, this is what you do. Does yours?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't say this is what you do, but they'd be like, have you ever thought of doing this? Like, or even if I go
sometimes,
or if I ask them a question, they answer the question.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe it's happened sometimes, but yeah, more often than not, I feel maybe I'm uncomfortable with the pauses and I can't tell if they don't have anything to say, so then I just keep talking.
Okay, because that's okay.
But they've never addressed it.
Yeah. What do you mean you need sometimes they give you actionable items. Like for me, like, yeah, sometimes they'd be like homework or whatever, but like,
For me, it's not homework, even...
but like, because, okay, for me, it's usually like stress, anxiety, those things that I like to talk about and how to deal with it in certain moments. Like there's certain types of situations that'll bring it out for me. And in those times, like my therapist has sometimes been like, let's try and like, you know, be more self-compassionate. Be like, you don't have to try and stop yourself from being anxious, but just understand the moments it's happening. And then, and think about these things when it's happening.
But what about things more than that? What about like, why are you anxious? Or when you leave, do you ever not reflect on what you've talked about and be like, oh, wait, that is why I do that. Like sometimes the breakthroughs or whatever that happen aren't from them being like, okay, so in this moment, do this. It's just you reflect on your conversation and you're like, oh my God, maybe I am dealing. Like for me, I have issues, I think, with being vulnerable because I say deal with it in my life. And I'm a resilient person because it was also the way I was raised, but also like being a feminine gay kid, I had to learn young, okay, I'm going to put my wall up. Like I'm going to not feel anything. Like those things we work out together and it's really deep and it's really helpful. But sometimes I feel like you talk a lot about just like surface anxiety issues. And I'm like, are you not talking about why you're anxious or
that's
your family
or your kid?
That's
what I want them to prompt
kid?
It. Like, yeah, maybe I'm just, I need to change therapist, but I feel bad if she's so listening to this. Because I really like her a lot as
okay,
a person.
You should change therapist if you actually are again doing
but
what you like
honest,
her as a person.
Like,
she's never asked you about your parents.
What?
She's never said.
Yeah, no, of course she has, but.
Do you not think like, oh my God, I'm acting this way because my parents
are. I guess, but I'm just like, I've already thought of those things on my own. Like maybe, honestly, I don't know if this is narcissistic, but I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just like, there's not a lot of things that are coming out of this that I haven't
sat
through on my own and thought about.
But I want to like, now I'm like feeling like, not like, but I'm like, but.
You haven't said anything.
Like, I'm know, like, because I'm feeling, like, I'm scared, like, I don't want to be offensive, but if you think about, yeah, okay, you're like, oh, this, I'm like my parents because I'm like this, but doesn't it make you want to not be like your parents fully? Like, there's things about your parents that are good that you want to keep, things about your parents
but
what you're raised
this,
that
like,
are bad that you want to...
more than just about my parents. I don't know. I think sometimes you project your problems onto other people. I do think everyone should try therapy if they have... like the funds to do that. But I don't, I think sometimes the way you see it is that everyone should do therapy indefinitely and it should work for everyone. And I actually don't know if that's true. I don't think it's a bad thing in any way. And I don't think anyone should be ashamed of it. And if it works for you and you love it, I think that's cool. But I had that moment recently where I was like, I've been to two separate ones. Actually, the first time I ever did it, we went to like a couples therapist because we were like, we're in a working relationship together. How do we like, not optimize, but think about this. So I've been to three, and I just had this feeling like
after those therapy
I
sessions, we would always be happier.
Those ones were the best because we were working together, though. It was specifically about finding perspectives of each other, how to spend like special time for dates and time apart. Those kind of things were all actionable that we would then be like, cool, yeah, we're going to have a Sunday fun day that's focused. Whereas, I don't know.
But it was more than that. Like, we had conversations where it was like, Greg is trying to say this, and this is why he's upset. Mitch is trying to say this, and this is why he's upset. And we look at each other, and we're like, oh.
Exactly, but that's something that happens with people.
You don't have those moments with your therapist, with yourself.
Not really. Are you willing to accept that therapy might not be for everyone?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm willing to accept that, because I do think that I think of it like going to the gym for your mind. Like, I really feel...
But not
like,
everyone goes to the gym, and that doesn't make everyone unhappy.
No, sorry. I think, like, if therapy were to be publicly funded, I think that our society and everyone would be able to benefit and make actually every... like, the world a less violent, more... less binary, more balanced, better place. And I think that I do honestly feel like every single person, like my genuine reaction to you saying that is that you have like more work to do to allow yourself to get to the point where you start to think about yourself differently. Because I don't know.
That's what I guess my frustration has been in just like wanting someone to take me on that journey a little more, like hold my hand a little more. And maybe I just haven't found that right therapist. That's all.
Which is why I can't
and
fully disagree with you because you're right. Like maybe.
Has been like, well, I've gone to two individually and I've gotten the same result.
And I can't,
which is like, oh, they're awesome. They're great people. They're good at talking to me and or like listening to me. But I don't feel like sometimes you describe different types of activities your therapist will give to you, or like you'll like talk I don't know. Like, you'll talk to a chair.
I'll talk to a chair. I'll talk to you as you being in the chair.
And I've never done anything remotely close to that in therapy.
Wow. Okay. Honestly, now I'm like, is it just you get bad luck? Like,
maybe. Or maybe there's different types of therapists and you just happen to find one who has like a style.
And my recent therapist was suggested from my first one who I really liked. So like, they obviously have a relationship within therapy to know. Like,
yes, but also your therapist right now recommended mine.
Yeah, that's also why I'm like, yeah, no, I know. And I just would assume that she
I just feel bad. Like, if she's listening to this, I'm sorry. Like, I actually really
like you. honestly, my therapist, like, I bet with ASAP Science and stuff, with podcasts, would consciously has told me she will not listen to it. She will not go into it, which I think your therapist,
I've never
assuming
asked.
Maybe that
ask.
She's good. Like, that's what I mean. Like, I'm like, maybe she's not a good therapist, but she's a good therapist. She would, if she saw you at a podcast, she would not listen to it because it would like create.
Yeah, that would be weird. Yeah. I think, yeah, in any circumstance. Like, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just
agree.
Like, it feels like you talk to me sometimes where you're like, you're trying to figure yourself out right now. And I'm just like, therapy should be a part of it.
But also sometimes I'm like, I wish you would let me talk to you about that stuff.
Well, that bothers me. What, you think that I should have to talk to you and not my therapist about things?
No. Oh. I just mean, like, sometimes I feel like you'll push stuff aside and say, like, you should go talk to your therapist about that. But I'm like, that can't be the answer for everything. The answer for, like, any issue I'm having can't be go to therapy.
Okay, that's fair. But sometimes what I'd say in, like, in a cognizant way is that the thing that, for example, might be going on with you is very personal. So I'm gonna be empathetic, I'm going to love you, and I'm going to talk you through it as someone who knows all the players in the game, who know you, who know the people you might be talking about, and I'm going to give you a really well-rounded opinion, and you're going to tell me things because I'm your boyfriend in a certain way. The nice thing about a therapist is that legally, they are a stranger. You can say anything. The scariest thing, they don't know the people you're talking about.
Yeah, no,
they won't have this personal opinion, and you can get further with what maybe might be going on. I'm not saying you can't talk to me about those things, but I'm just saying, like, it's some of the things I think you're dealing with are intense enough that, like, I would value you going talking to your friends about, to your family about, to a therapist about, and me. Because sometimes I'm just like, it's a lot for me to take on to be like maybe the one person who knows these things, for example. That's all. But I'm like, I would never say you have to. I'm just like, and you're right, projecting maybe because that's what I do. I'm like, I need support.
And you find it works really well, right?
Like, you
that's
learned,
all I mean.
Yeah.
I want to go back to saying, like, I do think therapy is a great asset for a lot of people, especially, like, men in particular who have been told by society that we shouldn't really talk about
and
our
people
feelings.
People who have same reactions to therapy maybe that you do. Like, they think maybe there's harder time to work for men. Like, I don't know. I was just thinking, like, men maybe aren't as open to therapy, and maybe they also, when they go, don't even enjoy it. I don't know.
I don't know if that's true. I know even some straight men on like my Facebook or whatever. Have
you
posted,
know straight men? I'm just kidding.
I have few straight men from university. Oh, I don't talk to them anymore. But
the straight men on my Facebook, I see them. Like, this, like, that's all
yeah,
you know.
Like, I literally, I'm
we have tons of straight friends.
So many. But I've seen, like, one in particular was like, every guy needs to go to therapy. Like, he's always like promoting it. And I'm like, that's really cool. And I would never ever say somebody shouldn't. And I, for that
reason. But
do you
not feel like weird that, I don't know. I'm like, you fall into that. You're a guy.
Yes, but I go. I've given it a shot,
yeah,
right? Like,
you're right.
It is just like everything works. And I'm not saying I should stop. I'm not saying I will stop. And maybe I need. I just like am annoyed that I have to put in more effort to find it.
Yeah, because it's
maybe.
Weird. It's like if
and
I was
if the next one doesn't is the same thing. I'm gonna be like, okay, yeah, like it works sometimes, but maybe I only go when I'm having like I don't know, a certain type of issue.
No, I agree. Like, you do go to a different therapist and it happens again, it's like, I can't relate to that because all I've ever had are experiences where I'm like, wow, this has helped me so much. And that's all I say is, like, I used to be so different. I used to be so cold. Like, I'm just learning so much about myself, and, like, it's all things that are just making me feel more, like, holistic and happier. And that's why I think it's so important for everyone, because I think of myself as having a very fortunate life. I haven't even had very much trauma or anything, and I still find it beneficial. And I'm just like, there's people out there like carrying so much. And this actually gets into a separate point, which is like my biggest frustration with it, which is the socioeconomic issue, which is rooted in the fact that people, there is a stigma against it, because they like, if it was funded properly the way I think it should be, it would be considered like a medical, like a medical disease, or I think our society would be better if everyone could get it. It's just hard to get.
Right.
Because people don't value it.
Well, I mean, like, you know, like physical exercise, yeah, having like a personal trainer is not true. Also covered by the government, right?
But it's so expensive to do therapy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the gym is kind of, I guess you're right, though. Actually, you could go to the gym for like $50 a month.
And there probably are cheaper alternatives to therapy. Actually, you're right. That maybe are the, Planet Fitness of therapy. Because
like $10 or whatever. Yeah, it seems out of whack sometimes where like you should be encouraging people to be mentally healthy so that you are less likely to have to pay for their life when they have mental breakdowns.
Exactly, and mental health
has an effect on your physical body.
That's the one thing that Trump says is like, oh, if there's ever a shooting, oh, it's a mental health issue. It's like, okay, well then hike your taxes.
Invest into
it. Yeah, invest in it, you shit. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm like, I don't want to talk about that.
When there is a shooting in the United States, there can be a narrative that mental illness is at the root of these tragedies, in many ways to distract from the topic of gun control. However, an analysis of 235 mass killings found that only 22% of the perpetrators could be considered mentally ill. And a 2016 study estimated that just 4% of violence is associated solely with serious mental illness. A 2015 study found that less than 5% of gun-related killings in the United States between 2001 and 2010 were committed by people diagnosed with a mental illness. However, as we have discussed, you can still benefit from therapy even if you are not diagnosed with an illness. And it seems intuitive that discussing anger and homicidal thoughts with a licensed professional could have a positive impact on a person to reduce incidences of violence. But it is a lofty claim to say that mass murders in the U.S. are solely an issue of mental illness.
But it is, it's like true, like people, like mental illness kills people. Suicide is a huge issue.
And it kills themselves and it kills other people, clearly, in today's world.
So then, like, why don't we invest in it like medicine?
No, you're right.
It's a stigma. It's a society thing. And maybe as we grow up and, I don't know, mental health becomes more... It's why mental health awareness is so important.
And it's such a hot topic right now because I think people are realizing, like, hey, like food, like the gym, like those things that we know are important for us. And we teach kids, like, here's how many vegetables you should have.
Yeah.
How much water, how much physical activity.
Yeah.
Here's how much time you should spend. Like, being open about your emotions and thinking, like, I do agree, like, even if I just spend time with a friend chatting, that is therapy, right? Where you can actually ruminate, say things, and then hear someone kind of help you interpret them and go like, oh, I actually never thought of that that way. Maybe I'm less or more angry about something. Who knows? There is such a value in that. And it is nice that there's someone that can exist that won't judge you for it, that is not entangled in your life.
Well, they even said, like you said recently, there was a study that found that like longevity in life has to do with having friends, like having a social network. It's like, because you probably are more likely to have better mental health because it's all about talking, communicating, and we're human. We're Homo sapiens sapiens. We're way too smart. That's our biggest flaw. We've created this thing, but
isn't that crazy?
We've gotten to the point, like, I think about it all the time.
Do other animals eat therapy?
No, because we... That's my point. Like, that's why I'm telling you. Like, I do think, if you think about it scientifically, why not? Because as animals that we've developed, the brains that we have, they're our greatest accomplishment and our biggest weakness. And it's like, because
smart. I guess sometimes I get confused, like, not to ramble about this too long, but I get confused about the goal of therapy. Because is it to make you a happier person?
So my context of it, which is through therapy, has to do with binaries. I think in life, I think balance is extremely important. And if you are too manic, too depressed, too sad all the time, it's okay to be sad. It's important to be sad. And it's really important to be happy. And it's about, if you're binary one way, a lot of my issues, like, I'm binary, not vulnerable enough. My whole life, I've been resilient and not allowed myself to be literally touched or to be open with people in order to cope. And now I'm too far on one side and I just need to be brought back more into the middle, because every time I've taken a step that way, I have felt genuine happiness. Like, I've felt something I've never felt before in my life.
Do you ever feel like maybe it's like turning you into something you're not? I know that sounds weird. I don't
know.
Like, sometimes, because so many, like, amazing artists, like, of course I'm not wanting people to be depressed and sad, but like, a lot of that kind of stuff in our culture, in our world, comes out of people having those like emotions.
It's not
that are
about
true
it's
to
not
their
that's
experiences.
What I mean. It's not about
and
binary
the happier
going
you
to,
are, the less likely you are to create art, I think.
I totally disagree. It's not about being binary, going to the other direction and completely changing yourself. It's about being aware that this is who you are, but to take steps in this direction is going to maybe make you feel better and have the mental capacity to create. I have been much more creative personally ever since going to therapy because I'm actually being able to look at myself, be vulnerable. I'm like, let's take comedy, for example. Without therapy, there's no way my jokes would be as funny as they are because I'm able to tap into myself right, in like a
like
new
the
way.
Truth of, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like whether if you are a creative, say you're making an album or something like that, maybe you're really, really depressed and that's why you're in therapy. But if you go to therapy, you're going to understand that depression. You're going to understand where that's at and you are going to create something better, arguably. But just because you're sad doesn't mean that you're also an amazing artist. So you've, right. Like that's, I think, something that's been like pop cultural, like blowing up because whenever it happens, a confirmation bias.
The trope of the tortured artist persists in our culture, be it Vincent van Gogh, Virginia Woolf, or Robin Williams. But is there any truth to it? One of the earliest studies examining this link was in 1931, where over 800 well-known geniuses at the time were interviewed, and almost everyone had some sort of mental health issue. A 2011 study of 1.2 million patients and their relatives found certain mental illnesses, in particular bipolar disorder, are more common among artists and scientists. And a separate study found that being an author is associated with an increased likelihood of schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. Still, these studies remain relatively anecdotal, as having a creative profession does not necessarily mean you are creative. And other studies of creative geniuses, such as an analysis of Nobel laureates, found no link. More research is needed to understand if this link is more than just a coincidence.
What's the most important thing you've learned from therapy? And then I'll think of something as well.
Yeah, the most important thing that I've learned is that so many of the things that I love about myself and that I've taken for granted and that make me who I am are also maybe part of the reasons why I'm struggling. And to like own them and to understand them and to combat them with some other new ways of living are going to make me feel more balanced. And when I'm on my deathbed and I look back on my life are going to help me just be like, I had the best possible life that I could. And I couldn't before therapy realize it. And I know that I was just sad and harsh and feeling like shit. So I don't know. It was a weird answer. What about you?
Mine's kind of the same. Like, I think to wrap it up into a simple phrase or words is like having self-compassion. Like what I learned from therapy was that you're not there to necessarily fix yourself. You're there to like understand yourself and like learn how to, you know, I'm a perfectionist. That's like kind of my thing.
That's what I mean.
I
even the whole
on.
Time. That's what I didn't want to say the whole time. I'm like, your things against therapy are a little bit perfectionist.
Maybe, but you're telling me that your therapists do very different things than mine. So
yeah,
I know.
I don't.
But
know.
What I mean is like to understand those moments of perfectionism and just, or of happiness or sadness or anger and like be able to accept them and not have them weigh so heavily on myself. Of course, there's steps to improve them, but like it's not always about being like, I have to be better. I have to get, you know, stop doing this. I have to improve on this. It's like,
yeah, that's interesting because that is not a, I don't, yeah, okay. That's
but that's like that part of that self-compassion. Yeah. Like stopping and being like, you know, it's okay.
It's okay.
You messed up.
And that's why you've been successful in your life. It's created a lot of good things for you.
That's what I mean. It's hard for me to sometimes be like, I know my perfectionism is a part of what.
But it's also ruining a lot of your progress,
too. It's the thing that I struggle with on a daily basis. So, all right. Well, that was our little chat. I feel like we could have another full podcast of us just like doing therapy talk and like going into our actual problems. If you guys want us to do that, you can let us know. That might be a little hard to do on a podcast. Like, I feel like I feel uncomfortable, but like, there are podcasts that do that with people.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazingly vulnerable to do that.
I love Esther Perel's podcast. Well, thank you so much. Oh my God, I feel sweaty. I'm like, oh my God, I don't talk a lot about myself. It wasn't like, I feel like I didn't laugh too much on that one, but I hope
took
something away.
No, yeah, it may not have been
funny,
but hopefully it was useful. I know, like, we both believe in therapy, but I obviously have a slightly different opinion, so let us know. You know, hashtag side note podcast if you want to message us, or at Mitchell Moffat, at Whale Watch Me PLZ on, you know, Twitter.
My amazing handle.
Yeah.
Okay, love you all.
We'll see
Peace.
You soon.
Bye.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.